that she betrayed her vow was easily dismissed, I think, by the double standard most women have about what they do and what their men do. If women change their minds, men must take it. When men change their minds, they're brutes. One male listener wrote to me of his frustration with this double standard. He lamented that women need to understand how frustrating it is dealing with a double standard that only takes into account the woman's immediate needs or desires. It was his perception that everything the woman feels or needs is legitimate and very important, while anything related to the man is unimportant and selfish. I think as generalizations go, he has a good point. Try visiting various female-oriented internet chat rooms, and you'll find cheering sections rallying behind women who trash their men, determined to leave them for trivial reasons. He's not talkative enough. I just don't feel complete. I'm bored. He doesn't want me talking to my mother every day. And while we're talking about double standards, let's not forget what happens in the bedroom. Women expect their men to understand when they're not interested in sex. But when the men don't or can't perform, watch out. What causes this double standard mentality? In one big hyphenated word, self-centeredness. And what is the source of this self-centeredness? I believe it's a result of the women's movement with its condemnation of just about everything male is evil, stupid, and oppressive, and the denigration of female and male roles in families, as well as the loss of family functioning as the result of divorce, daycare, dual careers, and the glorification of shacking up in unwed motherhood by choice. These are the core destructive influences that result in women not appreciating that they are perfected, as are men, when they are bonded in wedlock and have obligations to family. The result is women get married thinking largely about what their marriage and their man can do for them and not what they can do for their men. And when there is so little emphasis on the giving, the nitpicking and pettiness chews up and spits out what could have been a good marriage. Cindy's email addresses the issue of giving and doing. I have been married for 10 years, and I had a huge problem with caring and feeding of my husband. I did not know the time my mother put into caring and feeding my dad until I was having difficulty in my marriage. It was then she helped me understand a wife's role. My generation, I'm in my 30s, was raised in a very me culture. If we're not happy, then no one will be. Luckily, my mom and dad taught me that in order to be happy and fulfilled, you must help, love, and care for others. Even with a great home life as a child, I didn't know that was so true in a marriage. I just thought you either have a great marriage or you don't, that somehow marriage existed outside your efforts. That was just one of my misassumptions. Another was that he should be as knowledgeable about things as my dad, with whom I constantly compared him. I constantly nagged instead of encouraged. Then my dad gave me advice on how the male ego worked. I followed his direction, being encouraging and essentially being his cheerleader. Things changed dramatically. My mother's advice after my many mess-ups was to love him. Now, that sounds pretty basic, but I now truly understand what the word love means. It's a profoundly tender, passionate affection for someone, an affectionate concern for their well-being. God's greatest gift after life itself is love. God created him for you. Love your husband with all your heart, and treat him like the gift from God that he is. The notion of love as a gift, as a verb, as an attitude, as a commitment, is a revelation to some people. Unfortunately, love is usually looked at as a feeling that comes over you and makes you happy. And of course, if you're happy, then you'll behave nicely. Somehow the notion is out there that you're entitled to behave badly if you don't feel that love and feeling. More than that, if you don't feel that love and feeling, you're entitled to get it somehow, somewhere, with someone else who's available. This sense of entitlement comes from a culture that has elevated feelings over obligation, responsibility, and commitment. I have a right to be happy, don't I? Is not an infrequent comment from callers frustrated that their marriages haven't put them in a perpetual Valium drip state. And this focus on happiness helps them to rationalize their virtual abandonment of marriage and family, and they're replacing it with hobbies, drugs and alcohol, work, affairs, whining and therapy, or with friends or family, or hostility directed at those who love them. This is not a minor issue. When marriages